often say the last thing I think about when I go to sleep is my cup of coffee in the morning.
So the thing about these tours, and I've actually been hired to do a couple of them, and they're always kind of horrible, is that when you have 20 or 25 musicians on the road, you really need parity. You cannot have one artist that's a diva or throws everything off. And in this tour, we had a diva.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I am Laura Wexler.
I'm Jessica Hinken. And this week on the podcast, a supposedly fun thing I'll never do again, which is a nice homage slash apology. Sorry to David Foster Wallace. We have two tales in which very smart and very game people embark on what seems like a terrific venture, only to count the days till it's over.
Before we get started, we want to thank Park School of Baltimore, an independent K-12 progressive school in North Baltimore. So this first storyteller is Nancy Glass, and she is a badass. She is one of those beast nurse researchers. So I have, I'm from a family of nurses. All most of the women in my family, my grandmother, my mother, my aunt, all were nurses, and they were all these very, and my mother is still, very practical, very smart, very able and capable women who are gonna, like, if you're in trouble, you want them on your team. Nancy Glass reminds me of those people. She does research in preventative programs for sexual violence, mostly in Africa. And the story she shares is about a misadventure she had in the Congo, where she has worked for many, many years and now had a chance to experience it in quite a different way.
So about 5 years ago, I got an email, and it said, titled, "Run Across Congo." Some reason I got excited about that, and I opened the email. And it was an organization raising funds to support a group that was going to run 7 marathons in 7 days across Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo to raise awareness and support for coffee growers in the region. I thought, my dream has come true. So some of you may have heard about Congo and think conflict, war, Ebola, the rape capital of the world. But when I hear Congo, I think of my second home, where I've been living and working for the past 30 years. When I first arrived when I was 20 years old as a Peace Corps volunteer who knew nothing. Beautiful sunsets, amazing rumba music, and the best sense of humor people in the world. And then you may not know now, back in the day I was a runner. And I did run ultramarathons. And so I have run 50 miles in a day, so I thought it sounded reasonable to run 7 marathons in 7 days. So if you don't know what that means, that's 26.2 miles a day, 183.4 miles in 7 days, to be precise. And then the third thing was coffee. I often say the last thing I think about when I go to sleep is my cup of coffee in the morning. So it was like everything I love. So they weren't contacting me to run the race. They were contacting me for money. But I decided that they should let me run the race. So I did my best. I'm a nurse. I know Congo. I speak French. I'll be useful. And they said, okay, it's 3 months away. Raise $15,000. Pay your own way. And you're in. I think they thought they could get rid of me. So because I have good friends and family, I raised $15,000. Put my money in, and met them in Congo. I'd never met any of these people before. I found out it was 9 women. That should tell you something. 9 women, because we may be the only people in the world that would do this, were there, and we were going to run 7 marathons in 7 days. So we started. But as we started, they said, Nancy, we weren't able to get a healthcare provider. So since you're a nurse, we have this box here of pills and whatnot. So if there are any problems, you'll take care of that, right? And they said, oh, we've never been to Africa, much less Congo, and none of us know French, so you'll translate as well. So I didn't want to be a pain and, you know, complain early on. So I said, sure, that seems reasonable. So off we go. Day one, it was that adrenaline, you know, it carries you through. The community was very supportive. The children were running beside us. It was fabulous. Day two, we got up similar. Day three, the organizers, I just want to tell the women in the room, the organizers were men, said to us, we think this is going to be a hard next 2 days because we're going to go from the plateau in Congo to the mountains, which, okay, so we've already run two marathons. Let's run up a mountain. So off we go, and we get to the hill, and I hear the race coordinator saying that we're going to go visit a hospital and visit raped women. And I thought, what does this have to do with coffee and running? And so I went and found him, and I asked him, I'm like, what is this visit about? And he said, well, and you have to think, I didn't realize this, but this was a serious fundraiser. There was videos being made and cameras and all these pictures being taken, which was bothersome because I don't look my best when I've run 26 miles. So I said, what is this about? And he said, well, we're going to go visit the raped women, and we're going to talk with them, and we're going to listen to them. And I said to them, you know, I've been working here a long time, and I know there's a lot of myths and a lot of interest in raped women here in Congo, but my Congolese colleagues always told me that it's the white people coming to look at the zoo of our raped women. And so it was very hard for me to see that this was a good thing. And I explained to them, I said, imagine Johns Hopkins Hospital. There were raped women that had been assaulted and they were in the hospital, that we would get a crowd together to go visit them and take pictures. We would never do that in America. He agreed with me. I said, why would we do that here? I didn't break through. They went ahead and did it. I refused to go. Didn't go well from then on. I made him mad. By day five, I had giardia. I was dealing with a panic attack from one of my fellow runners, almost a heat stroke from another, vomiting. And giardia is a bugger of a bug. It's one of those things that cause diarrhea. So I was frequently... There's no bathrooms, by the way. There's no rest stops. So I was in the bushes a lot. So I wasn't at my best. And I said to him, please don't make us go to visit the governor on this fifth day, because you don't want to make this political, because this is an election year in Congo. And if we make it political, this could cause problems for me, in the sense that I work with colleagues here, and people know who I am. If they see video of this, it could cause problems for my colleagues because they'll see it as political. Again, I couldn't get through. So you know how we had this intense exchange. I was very upset afterwards. He wasn't listening to me, and we were running, and I was telling him this isn't okay. The group is not doing okay. We need to get off this main road. We need some time. We're breaking down mentally and physically. It's day five. And he ignored me. So you know on radios and TVs, when people say bad words, they beep you out. Beep. Imagine just one long beep for about 5 minutes. That's what I said to him. That didn't go well either. So we finished. We did it. But day five, I hated myself. hated myself for being involved in this. This isn't what I care about. This isn't who I am. Raped women, you know, political. This is not the work that I do. I don't want this video to be shown. I was embarrassed. And just embarrassed. And but then I had this, I've got to finish. People raise money. I can't go home saying I quit. So I finished. I dipped my toe in Lake Kivu with everybody else. I went behind. I found a young man. Paid him $200 to take me in his taxi back to Bukavu to my friends in Bukavu. Oddly, when I walked in, they didn't applaud me because they knew all along what was. They'd seen many people come to raise money for coffee to help them, but never asked them what they needed. And I was now part of that. I was embarrassed. So the matriarch of the family that I've worked with for so many years said to me, "So, what you get for running 7 marathons and 7 miles, 7 days across Congo?" And I looked at her. I'm a little bit of a smartass. And I said, "T-shirt." And she said, "So, have you almost killed yourself for a T-shirt? Thank you."
Yeah, so that story was, it's insane.
I mean, 7 marathons in 7 days. Yeah. Who does, like,
Nancy?
And the fact,
Nancy,
and again, the fact that she finished it, yeah, even though it was all kinds of messed up, that she finished it. And
yeah, with Giardia. That's,
oh my yeah. God. And just stop. Oh my God. I mean, I can't imagine. I'm not going to run 1 marathon. Much less 7 in 7 days up and down mountains with intestinal distress.
Right. No.
Yeah. Anyway, on the theme of, or using intestinal distress as a segue, you will never get intestinal distress by listening to Local Flavor Live, the podcast from Baltimore Magazine that covers the local food scene. You can check them out at baltimoremagazine.com. And you can also check out
Golden West. You're not going to get intestinal
no.
distress there either because they're clean as F.
Tasty.
And they are a vegan forward menu located on the Avenue in Hamden since 1997. So our next storyteller is Josh Kahn, who is the artistic director, right, of the Creative Alliance in Baltimore. He has been a friend to so many musicians and artists and storytellers and actors and you name it, he has supported them. He is just producer extraordinaire. And this is a story about when he was a road manager for a month-long tour. Anyway, take a listen.
So about a dozen years ago, I was hired. I had one of the most trying months of my professional career. I was hired to be a road manager for a package tour that went out. It was a tour of musicians from the Caribbean, and it went out for a month along the East Coast around this time of the year. And the way it was supposed to start was the first 4 days were supposed to be all the artists would come together and we'd block the show and we'd figure out how it all run together and then we'd go out on the road. And the first 4 days, a hurricane and then a tropical storm and then another hurricane went over the island of Haiti and one of the artists was just stuck there. And I think that's my phone, sorry. And we just watched these storms come over the island and these the artists couldn't come in. We just watched it. We're like, oh my God, we can do this thing. 4 days of just wasted time. And finally, 6 hours before the show starts, this artist, Tikoka and Wanganeges, arrive in the United States in the end of October with no jackets, freezing cold, and get off the plane, and we get them right to the stage for like one quick sound check. And the way this band was set up is that it had a tenor banjo and some drums, this beautiful singer, and an accordion player. And the accordion was very key to their sound. And he gets up in front of the microphone, and he presses on his accordion, and it's just like nothing. And I was like, oh no, okay. I figured that maybe like the pressure from the plane destroyed the accordion. And here's the thing, I'm really good at what I do. And I was able to get a new accordion for this guy and this accordion to an accordion repair shop, and the show started. The next day, I get a call from the accordion repair shop. It had nothing to do with the bellows inside of the accordion. The guy opened up the accordion, and it was infested with hundreds of Haitian cockroaches. So not only do we have to pay for the repair of the accordion, but we had to pay for this expert exterminator to come in and clear out hundreds of Haitian cockroaches, which had taken over this guy's workshop. But that was not the worst part of this tour. So the thing about these tours, and I've actually been hired to do a couple of them, and they're always kind of horrible, is that when you have 20 or 25 musicians on the road, you really need parity. You cannot have one artist that's a diva or throws everything off. And in this tour, we had a diva. There's a musician named The Mighty Sparrow. I don't know if anybody ever heard of The Mighty Sparrow before? Silence. Okay. So I'm going to give you a quick little bit of history. So Calypso music is from Trinidad and Tobago, and one of the most important musicians of all time from Calypso music is the Mighty Sparrow. Now, Calypso music is kind of fun and danceable, but really at the core of Calypso music, it's about the wordplay and double entendre. It's like the history of hip-hop goes back to this Calypso sound, and Mighty Sparrow in the 1950s was the king of this. He could write rhymes that could just destroy politicians, but were fun, and it was really great. But this was the mid-2000s, and the Mighty Sparrow was in his 70s, and he was not the Mighty Sparrow of the 50s, and he was on this tour. The other thing about the Mighty Sparrow is he had 56 children. This is not a lie. He had 56 children with just about as many women. And when we were out on the road, 56 children and over 200 grandchildren would just show up at different venues demanding to come backstage. And it was like impossible to manage this. You know, it would be like 40, 50 people at a time. And, you know, we're at these performing arts centers and they wanted these guest lists. And it was just people being like, I'm his kid, I'm his grandkid. And there was no way to manage it. The other thing about the Mighty Sparrow is that the man really liked Budweiser. Really like Budweiser, and I spent a month screaming with this man about how to, like, just trying to negotiate, like, when he couldn't have Budweiser. Because when he didn't have his Budweiser before show, he was like, it was like 1956 in Trinidad. He was just electric. But when he had one drink, it was a disaster. And the other thing about these shows is we would tour these performing arts centers. So we would get there in the morning, and we'd set up, and then generally we'd have a show with elementary school kids. And he really liked his Budweiser. And so if he didn't drink a Budweiser, he would, like, tell the kids about his history, and they would just be like, this is amazing. Give the man one Budweiser. And the thing is, with Calypso music, is you had these very political songs, but the man could also work blue. And in advance of this, I decided to come up with a list of all of the blue songs I can remember. So I'm going to give it real quickly. We have Saltfish, Sell to Pussy, Moorcock, Afraid to Pussy, Bite Me, Bacchanal Party, A Bag o' Sugar Down There, Benwood Dick, Big Bamboo, Da Raper Man, Fat Pussy Cat and Rat, Hairy Spider, Lego Mystique, Oriental Touch, Pussy Laughing at Me, Sex Education, and Willie Dead. There was a lot more than that, but give the man one drink, and I would have to be so apologetic to principals as he's singing Pussy Bite Me and gyrating on stage in front of third graders. And this happened over and over and over again until I was just like, this tour has got to end. And it finally ended, and we did not say goodbye. I've worked in this field for 20-some-odd years, and he's the only musician who I consider an enemy. And I thought I was done with him. But in the middle of the tour, he actually lost his deposit check, which was a $10,000 check. And the organization I was working with agreed, like, okay, he lost it, he needs his money, the man had a lot of debts, we will recut him a check. Now, the thing I didn't know about when you cancel a check, you know it's only for 30 days? Did you know this? When you cancel a check, it's not for a lifetime. 5 years after this tour, I got a call from the organization. There was a $10,000 check cashed from the Mighty Sparrow, who disappeared from the face of the earth for a number of years, with this money, happy as a clam, and I am glad I will never have to see that man ever again. Thank you very much.
That story, I just could listen to over and over again. The cockroach part was really hard to listen
vivid.
To. I wasn't expecting that. But the list of the blue songs sung by the Mighty Sparrow,
yeah.
I mean, just Like, and he'd had that ready to go. He wanted to tell that story that night. It was an all-audience show.
Yeah. I mean, yes, just the... That guy was doing his thing. And, you know, Josh, I think Josh was so smart to see, like, okay, I just got to get through this thing. It's not to be changed. And I think that's true of both Nancy and Josh. Josh's stories. It's like, sometimes you just have to get through it. You can't change it. You can't fix it. There's nothing else to do but grit your teeth and realize you were going to have an excellent story afterward. And that is a small consolation.
So another way to get through when you just can't change things is to visit one of our sponsors, The Wine Source, which is located on Elm Avenue. And they provide all kinds of elixirs that allow you to get through it and at a price point that just can't be beat. Another opportunity for you, if you have any sort of story about life in independent music, you can come out to our all-audience show on January 23rd, A Beautiful Terrible Thing, Making a Life in Independent Music. It is at the Auto Bar, so you got your record store story, you've got your indie band story, you've got your tour management.
Fangirl story.
Yeah, fangirl story, groupie story, fanboy story. Come on out and share it.
Check us out at StoopStorytelling.com for all of our Stoop events in 2020. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. Leave us a review wherever you get your podcast content, and we will see you here next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot.